All right, it's Bill Leff and it's Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder. Joined right now on the phone by Ian Schur. Ian is Executive Director of CNET News, here to talk about things in the tech world. Ian, how are you?
Everything's doing all right.
Good?
How are you?
Good, very good. I want to start off with a story that just kind of happened about a half hour ago or so, and that was the FBI Director James Comey talking about the investigation in Hillary Clinton and the emails. And I asked Ryan Burrow, who's our newsman at the time, but I thought I'd ask you a very, very similar question. Is any email server, is any website really 100% foolproof and safe?
Absolutely not. And that's part of the discussion that happened with all of this, is that we've seen the amount of hacking going on just rise exponentially. We've written on CNET many times that the idea of state-sponsored hacking, people like Chinese and the Russians and the Syrians even, have built these armies of hackers who have gone after everything from state secrets here in the United States to corporate secrets at companies. And so there is really no place on the internet that's safe. And that's why partially the State Department described a lot of their very kind of what seems like crazy secure ways of doing things, like you aren't allowed to use a mobile device, right? These types of things that they were doing for most of their people, they seemed a lot very onerous, but a lot of it seemed to be built around this idea that there are only some ways that we can guarantee your safety and the safety of the communications. Now, obviously, the whole world doesn't work that way. We live on mobile devices these days. The president himself has a BlackBerry. And so there is a lot of stuff that, you know, we've got these limits of what technology can do to keep us safe, and then what we need to do to get jobs done. And those things are butting up against each other, which is what really caused a lot of these problems.
So you could get somebody to build firewall after firewall after firewall, but the bottom line is, at the end of it all, you're never going to be 100% safe. That's impossible.
Well, software is built by humans, and humans are fallible, right?
Yeah.
And that's just the bottom line of it. And so there is no guarantee that you're going to be able to build software that doesn't have holes somewhere. And that's just the reality of it. There are new technologies being built that use stuff like artificial intelligence and other things to try and cut down on what could possibly be a hole in the system. And there are hackers out there, which we call white hat hackers, who are good guys, who actually go around and use their skills to help companies find holes before the bad guys find them. And then there are even people out there who are like Facebook and Yahoo who pay hackers to tell them about the holes they find before they use them in bad ways. And so there are a lot of attempts out there to try and solve these problems, but it's still not a guarantee 100%. There's always going to be something that's bad, and that's just part of dealing with the internet. And that's part of why there are parts of the government that don't even use the internet that we use, because they don't trust it enough to use that. But that's not how all the government functions, and that's part of why we have these problems.
Well, yeah, we could head back to the days of the file cabinet and the copy machine and the fax machine and all those kind of things. And you know
that.
Well, but Ian,
think about this. Like we had the people over at the Veterans Administration, the VA, lost laptops decades ago. You remember this?
Yeah.
Had files and files of people's social security numbers.
Yeah.
That wasn't an internet problem. That wasn't a hacking problem. So these things, at the end of the day, you can't control this stuff. And back in the 60s, before we had the internet, people were file copying stuff and they were showing up with tiny cameras. There's just no way to keep things 100% secure. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, where there's an intent, people are going to find a way. And if humans are building it, they can definitely crack it. But you wonder what the takeaway from this. And I don't mean the campaign. Obviously, they're going to use it against you that she's careless and, you know, and that she's not paying attention enough and is going to put the country at risk. But yeah, Hillary Clinton has been around long enough and in on a lot of those briefings. She knows what is secure and what isn't secure. And so where do you think we go from here? Because she should have known. I mean, I know she should have known better. Do you think it's going to change the policy? Do you think the public's going to say, like, well, then maybe you can't. You just really can't, because it seemed like there was some commingling of the streams of the communications, of the emails, right, where she was using both of those servers and email chains at the same time.
Well, look, it's not my place to judge, but I think what it comes down to is that the State Department has already closed this loophole. So one of the things that came up in this investigation, and I'm not a political expert, but I know a few things about this, is that there were previous secretaries of state who also used their own email service and didn't use the State Department. And it was after she left that they really started saying, no more, we can't allow this. And so they've already solved part of these problems. But there's a larger problem as well, which is how does super secret parts of the government do their job when they're in the field, when they're not allowed to use mobile devices? That's a huge problem. And this is beyond just using State Department servers. This is about how can we trust to keep information safe? And what the government is grappling with, and what's really the larger problem here, is that there is no guarantee of safety. And so what level of lack of safety are we willing to go to do this? I have met executives at high-power Fortune 50 companies, some of the most powerful and most the biggest companies in the world, who when they travel to other countries, they don't bring their own devices because they expect them to be hacked just by nature of being on other wireless networks. So you have to really think about the reality of the situation throughout the world is that this stuff is a huge problem. It's not just about Hillary Clinton. It's something that everyone is confronting.
Ian, let's switch gears a little bit. Tesla had a really rough week, a horrible accident in one of their self-driving cars. A man died. What can you tell us about that story?
Yeah, so this happened last week. There was a driver in Florida who was using the Tesla. You may have heard that they rolled out this ability to do self-driving, but they said, you know, look, that we have this. It's in what is called beta, right, which means it's not fully finished,
yeah,
and that we can't guarantee that it's 100% trustworthy. And there had been people who went on YouTube with videos of them using it in ways that Tesla did not recommend and almost getting in accidents. And so, you know, as Tesla always says, when you use the self-driving feature, you need to have both hands on the wheel and you need to be watching the road. You can't just suddenly take a nap or start watching a movie. And so it seems as though this driver in Florida, who had almost gotten in an accident before and actually put it on YouTube like a week ago, that he actually got in an accident and died. And it's very clear that the device, that the Tesla was in self-driving mode. And so now Tesla is confronting this problem of, even though they told people do not use it this way, a lot of people are. And it's causing, you know, we have the first fatality with it. And there's a lot of other questions, too. How does the government respond? How do lawyers get involved? Who's responsible? All of these questions are starting to pop up. And it's forcing Tesla to really confront the reality of its limits, of the limits of technology, of the limits of what is going on right now. And that's a really fascinating story.
I know they said there was a warning, even though it's a self-driving car, you got to keep your hands on the steering wheel and pay attention. But ultimately, their goal is that not to be the case, right, where you can do other things while you're driving.
Well, they haven't said that. What they've said is that, you know, and we've written on it, on CNET many times about this, what they are focusing on is making it so that the car is as safe as possible. They believe, and all of the testing shows, that in most situations, the cars are better drivers than we are. And they are able to detect and protect us in ways that we never can. And I've seen this. I've seen cars go down the road, and they see someone who's kind of sitting between two cars that's ready to jump into the street. And they see that person because their feet are visible under the car faster than a human would. But the problem is that there's still limits to this technology and how much we can trust it. And Tesla, in this case, said that the brightness of the vehicle next to the Tesla and the sky were too much of the same color and it didn't see it, right? So there are still things that are going on that are not perfect. And that's part of why they say, look, we can't trust this technology 100%. Sounds like the last story we talked about, right?
Right.
You can't trust this technology 100%. So you need to make sure that you're aware of everything going on before that. Eventually, the promise that Detroit and the rest of the auto industry has kind of suggested is that we may be in the future where we can take naps while we're on our way to work. That's not something that they've guaranteed or even said that they're really going to offer anytime soon. Almost everybody still has a wheel in their cars, and they still force you to make sure that you're involved. Even the test cars from Google have wheels in them, even though they said maybe we don't need them. They ended up putting wheels back in them because they know we just need to make sure that it is safe.
Yeah, the standard that's out there seems impossible. And we mentioned it before, and you mentioned the other story, right? If humans are building it, there's going to be some level of failure. But maybe that's the way that it should be presented from the get-go, is that as safe as this is, it's not perfect, but neither are you. This is safer than you are. You know, planes, it's the safest way to travel, but they crash. We accept that, you know, and cars and accidents. Maybe they should say, we're never going to achieve, you know, 100% perfection.
Well, they actually are, and they've said this many times. As we mentioned during the Tesla, when they rolled it out, they said, you cannot trust this. You need to keep your hands on the wheel. Everyone else actually has this technology today. Almost every auto manufacturer could roll out a self-driving car right now, but they're not doing it because they don't think it's ready. And so instead what they're doing is they're layering in safety technology into your cars. A lot of us now have cars with lane departure warning systems. That's actually a self-driving feature, mm-hmm. right? But what mm-hmm. they've done is that they've taken it out of the self-driving and they put it in your car and they say it's a safety feature instead. You still have to drive. Right, so they're layering these little features on and on. One of the most popular things you see on all the ads now is collision detection. Right, keep your car from rear-ending another car. That's another self-driving feature that they've layered into your cars. So they're doing this in a very strategic way. And over time, you're going to have a car that nearly is able to drive itself. But think about it this way: almost every airplane that goes into the air today, most of the time that you're flying, it's by a computer.
Sure.
Most of the pilots are not flying those airplanes anymore. Even takeoff and landing, a lot of times, is starting to happen by computer. So why do they still have pilots? Because we can't trust it 100%. That's
Absolutely.
What it always comes down to.
Ian, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week. It's Ian Schur, executive editor over at CNET News. We'll take a quick break and then get the news from Ryan. Stick around, Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN.